welcome to Fathoming Water. I'm your host, Melissa Mosey. A big thanks to Marie Perthree from the Central Arizona Project for last week's episode. Talking to Ms. Perthree was a great insight into how the Central Arizona Project functions and plans for the future. Marie Perthree has a hard science education in fluvial geomorphology and has gone on to policy planning in the public sector. This week, we talked to Juliet McKenna, who has a similar background, that of having a hard science education in bedrock geology and going on to policy planning, but in the private sector. Talking to both these women back-to-back, I started to see how resource planners think, what their concerns are, and their practical take on very big challenges. Juliet McKenna works for a private consulting firm, Montgomery & Associates, based in Tucson, Arizona. Juliet is a hydrogeologist and water policy consultant, and her work is focused on developing groundwater supplies and providing water rights support for municipal agencies, public water companies, tribes, and private entities. The former director of an interstate aquifer management group, Juliet has experience coordinating the interests of multiple jurisdictions and diverse stakeholders. Within Arizona, she has helped clients evaluate water availability to support planning and zoning decisions, water supply acquisitions, and analyses of Colorado River shortages. In this episode, Juliet explains what the private consulting sector does for water management. We get into talking about the timescales that planners have to think in, and it's all dependent on the problem at hand, whether that problem is the future price of water, a return on a capital investment, guaranteeing assured water supplies, or predicting changing groundwater hydrology. Her practical take on the nuts and bolts of how large-scale water projects work is fascinating. When Juliet looks at a project, she has to consider policies already in place, as well as future legislative actions on the horizon. She has to look at the cost and economics of the project, and most importantly, she has to look at the physical and environmental restrictions. She makes a great point that if the project is putting in a well, not all groundwater is alike. Some is too brackish to drink, brackish meaning water that has a high salt content. Her logical way of thinking through a problem allows her to advise a client in this situation to do sampling at different depths and locations, thus saving them a tremendous amount of money if they were to drill a well and find the water unusable. Basically, what Juliet does is find the problems that the clients may not know they have. We also talk about education and the benefits having a hard science background has for water planning professionals. Juliet has 20 years of experience and experience in other states and has advised many students in the direction they should take in school, including myself. When I first decided to return to graduate school for water, I met with Juliet to discuss my educational and career direction, and I encourage students listening to take what she has to say to heart. Unfortunately, you will hear audio issues in this episode when I am speaking due to a technical issue with the microphone I was using. Luckily, Juliet's microphone was working correctly, and she is the one we are most interested in hearing, so enjoy. And now, Juliet McKenna. Today I'm sitting here with Juliet McKenna from Montgomery & Associates, and that is a consulting firm. And Juliet, if you wouldn't mind letting us know what Montgomery & Associates is doing with water and how they help their customers and how they got started.
Montgomery & Associates is a company that's headquartered in Tucson, Arizona. We have offices in Phoenix and Denver and then some offices in South America. We have been in business for more than 30 years, and our specialty is water resources consulting. We are groundwater scientists and water planners. We assist companies, we assist mining companies, we assist municipal water companies, tribal interests, agricultural interests in planning for and developing their water resources. In Arizona, that primarily means that we're working with them on their groundwater supplies.
And looking to have renewable supplies or connecting them with CAP sources, or just working directly on their hydrology aspect?
Well, both. Back in the early part of the business, it was primarily focused on groundwater extraction. Prior to 30 years ago, there was no Central Arizona Project. So water companies operating in Central Arizona really had only groundwater to deal with. So our consulting services were focused on technical issues, extracting water out of the ground, addressing water quality issues, and helping industries and water companies deliver it to where it's needed. Since that time, water development in Arizona has gotten very complicated. And that is a good thing, ultimately, because we have other options for water supply. And the main difference is that Central Arizona Project now delivers Colorado River water to Central Arizona, which means that there's more options and opportunities to use water in Arizona. The other thing that's happened is that we've had a change in understanding of what effluent is. Effluent, or treated wastewater, is no longer regarded as a nuisance that needs to be disposed of, but rather a resource that can be utilized. So our clients that hire us to work for them have all these questions facing them regarding which water supplies they can use or should use. And so we consider all of these things, not just groundwater, but also the availability of what you called renewable supplies, which is really means Central Arizona Project water and effluent.
So it started out a very straightforward idea. How do you get water out of the ground? How do you move it to the places you need it? And the further along time went, the more complicated it got because of new sources, legislative bills being passed, new regulations. Okay, so I can see the growth there. Who was it that started Montgomery and Associates?
Well, not surprisingly, it was Errol Montgomery. Dr. Montgomery himself founded the company in 1984. And his history was that he was a student of Dr. John Harshbarger. And Harshbarger is known by many hydrologists actually around the world. His name is on the hydrology department building on the campus of University of Arizona. So he was actually the chair of the geology department at University of Arizona in the early 60s, and then was the founding chair of the hydrology department, I believe in the mid 60s when that department was established. And then from there, he actually became a private consultant and started his own company. It was one of the first firms specializing in groundwater hydrogeology in the world. And his practice was wide-ranging. One of his seminal works was actually in the mining business, where he helped mining companies determine that there are substantial quantities of groundwater in extremely arid areas in the intermountain basins of Chile and Peru. This work led to the facilitation of a lot of copper mining in these highly mineralized areas. And that was largely, those type of projects were what led to the success of his company. So Dr. Harshbarger, one of his main employees was Dr. Errol Montgomery. And Dr. Montgomery was also a professor and then ended up becoming a consultant, founding his own company in 1984. It came off of Harshbarger's company.
And then now you have a hard science background, but you do a lot of water policy. You've kind of had that shift from the hard sciences to the policy sector. But having that background of the hard sciences has really benefited you. And would you mind explaining how that development happened for you education-wise?
Well, my degrees are in geology, which is something that I just was drawn to as a student, and have a master's and bachelor's in geology. So as you say, hard science. This was straight geology. It wasn't an environmental studies degree. It was a science degree. So that's my education background. Professionally, though, I've always worked in water. I think that having the geology background, having a graduate degree, opened doors for me with consulting companies. But the questions that companies often hire consultants to do pertain to the shallower subsurface. So shallow groundwater, soil, and not so much bedrock geology, and the type of things that I went to school for. So it's true that I have a technical background, but most of my professional work is in the policy and planning arena. Although the science can often be generalized, the policy and the regulations cannot. They're very state specific. A lot of regulations pertaining to groundwater extraction are promulgated by states. Certainly, there's regional issues with availability of water as well. So I think that that's part of the reason, a large part of the reason why I'm in planning is I have the background from a number of different states, and I've learned to appreciate how important regulations and site-specific considerations are in addressing questions about water supply. The technical issues are fundamentally the most important thing, but often before the technical issues get addressed, it's more important to help water managers understand the context of their water issues. So for example, if you were to start a subdivision in an area where there's no current water use, it's a fairly straightforward thing to, if you were in the right type of area, to drill a well and extract groundwater. But before you do that, you need to understand if it's legal to do that in that place. And in Arizona, the populated areas of the state, there are lots of laws that govern the extraction of groundwater. And in addition to the existing laws, it's also important to understand the trajectory. So where might things go? If you're paying for water, either directly or indirectly, you want to understand what the cost of water might be in the future. And another thing is that there are regulations that either directly or indirectly will impact the price and availability of water in the future. An example of this is air quality regulations, because almost all of our water supply requires some kind of energy used to get, whether it's Central Arizona Project water that's being pumped or groundwater that's being pumped from the ground or effluents that's being treated, there's an energy cost associated with all of our water. And so as air quality regulations alter the landscape of our power supply, there's a direct effect on the cost of water, cost and possibly availability. So these are all questions that need to get folded into the initial planning stages of any type of project, whether, like I said, the example is a new subdivision, or whether it's a water company that's looking to increase capacity for future companies, or it's a mining company that's looking to begin production, an agricultural district that needs to increase its water yield. The questions are the same regardless of who the end user is.
So it would appear that a consulting agency for water is needed because of the incredible network and linkages between power, economy, even air quality. I didn't even think about air quality regulations affecting the cost of power, affecting the cost of water. That's incredible. So you have to think network, drawing all these things together. When you sit down on a project, how do you piece all that out?
Well, every project's different, and I've been a consultant for 20 years, and one of the reasons I still do it is there's so many new opportunities that come my way. The challenges are always different. When the phone rings, I'm never quite sure who it's going to be or what the questions are. So I really love that aspect of consulting.
Marie Perthrie, who we interviewed last week, she spoke about the fact that the three things that drew her to water is because it's always learning, it's important, and there's always a new challenge on the forefront. So it sounds like you were drawn to the same kind of challenges in water.
That's right. That's right. People who hire us to help them with their water supply issues is to help them define their problem. For example, they often may come and say, I need water for my subdivision. And they may say, I need this much water. I'm going to have X number of people living here, and I know that people use this much water. And one of the very first things that's incumbent upon us to do as their water consultant would be to question their assumptions of how much water they need. And so water demand calculations are a very important part of what we do. We know, the statistics have shown that for the last decade or more, that people are using less water, so that our per capita water demand is going down in spite or on top of population growth, and that actually demand really isn't correlated to population anymore. And that's something that isn't generally understood and that we think it's important for clients to plan for. Another assumption is the cost of water or the regulations that govern if you can use water or not. So again, will your project only be successful if water costs X? And to help them understand that the price of water may increase in the future and how much it may increase by.
So if a client comes to you and they say, yeah, I want a water supply, and I'm a water provider that wants to increase capacity. Is there a group of people that work on the project?
So our company is relatively small. We're a privately held company. There's only about 40 professionals in the Western U.S. So the way that our consulting firm functions is probably fairly different than the way that large publicly held international companies would function. I prefer this way. There's a lot of autonomy, and professionals manage their projects and manage their clients, but have the benefit of tapping into all the expertise and experience around them. So within the company, the professionals wear a number of different hats, but we definitely have experts in certain areas. So our company, another thing that's different about Montgomery & Associates is that we are not engineers. So if there is an aspect of a project that requires engineering, we'll team with an engineering firm to do that. So we are focused on groundwater and water supply as groundwater hydrologists and water planners. So within the company, we have four divisions, which is, they're not hard and fast divisions. There's a fluidity between them. But
yes, it's a pun. I'm always excited about a water pun. Good.
So the way we couch it is we work in mining hydrology. We work in water supply, which includes groundwater development and groundwater recharge projects, which is a big part of our core business. We also work on environmental projects, so water quality issues. And then the fourth area is the area that I have the most affinity with, which is water planning and economics.
Are there other people in that department?
Yeah, I have colleagues. And again, it's fluid, but we do have people who have an economics background, which is a really interesting tie-in to a hydrology degree, because it's an important connection because, again, it helps us address the economic aspects of issues. We've also hired people at a fairly late stage in their career that have the benefit of decades of experience in Arizona water policy issues. And in fact, those individuals were on the ground when Arizona's seminal groundwater laws were being passed and put together. And as policies developed over the last three decades in the state, those individuals were part of that process. So what they bring to the table is enormous in terms of the value that they can help provide clients who may not have that background or history.
So you've got the history behind you, you're thinking currently, but you're also thinking forward into the future. You're always having to estimate, educated estimate of what the future is going to look like in terms of water based on legislation. Planning is interesting to me because how far in the future you have to look ahead. When you look at water, how far are you looking ahead? Or is it based on each project?
That's a great question. And there's a number of ways to answer that. And one easy way to answer that is that in the active management areas in the state, which are the populated areas that cover 80% of our population or so, you're required to provide a 100-year supply of water. To my knowledge, no other state does it. And Arizona's had this on the books for over three decades. It's that fact that has led to the argument that Arizona has some of the most progressive groundwater laws in the country. So 100 years is one timeline. In terms of capital investments and payoff on projects, another convenient way to look at things is 10 years.
Oh.
If I drill a well that gives me better water quality and therefore reduces my treatment costs, you can compare the reduced treatment cost to the cost of drilling a new well in a 10-year time frame would be, you know, one convenient way to look at it. Another time frame, you have me interested in this time frame question. Hydrologists often use a 30-year period for looking at calculating hydrologic data. So, for example, you look at stream flow records and you talk about the 30-year average, or precipitation records and you talk about the 30-year average. That's another time frame that hydrologists are comfortable with using. And then in terms of trying to understand the cost and availability of water, I'm not comfortable talking to clients much more than 3 to 5 years in the future. And the reason is because things are changing so quickly in terms of these issues. An example of this is Central Arizona Project Water, which is available to the most populated area of the state. So it's a very important resource for almost any water user in the state. And the possibility that the Colorado River will have a shortage on it in the next 5 years is high. So clients need to factor in the possibility of a shortage in Colorado River supplies. Now, Colorado River supplies will not be cut for municipal customers for many years. However, if there's any shortage at all, the price that everybody pays for water will increase. So even though water will still be flowing through the taps, it affects the price for everybody.
And that's because they still have to pay their basic electric bills, maintenance costs, cost of all their employees. So your per unit cost of water goes up, even though they're delivering, or when they're delivering, less water.
That's exactly right.
So 3 to 5 years for money, 30 years hydrology, 10 years for a well, and 100 years for an AMA. Okay, so you're approached with the problem. Do you usually have a team of people that work on one problem, or are you kind of focused on one problem yourself? Do you get paired one-on-one with clients?
Every situation is different, but the reason that my colleagues and I aren't in business by ourselves is that we really do bring the strength of the team to the table. So we have people in the office that specialize, for example, in groundwater modeling, developing and utilizing numeric modeling to predict the flow of groundwater. And this is a very important part of what we do for clients, whether it's just for their own resource planning. For example, if they are a mining company and want to understand the availability of water at the mine site, a numeric model is essential. Or if it's for permitting, if you need to get a permit, for example, to recharge water within Arizona, groundwater model usually accompanies it. That's a specialized task that is not something that I personally would do and would work with a team member. So I would say we absolutely work as a team, but usually are assigned or develop client relationships sort of one-on-one. But the bench strength is a very important part of Montgomery & Associates and what we offer.
So there's a lot of information sharing.
Absolutely.
Okay, and how does that information sharing work, especially when it comes to new developments in policy or regulations?
One of the things that I do for the company is I track news and events on a regular basis. So I provide an internal sort of news summary to professional staff once a month. And I call it taking one for the team because I just do a scour of news outlets, regulatory agencies, both at the state and federal level. And I just have an inbox folder that just where I dump all these things. And once a month, I just summarize them because it is absolutely critical that we are on top of these developments so that we're not caught off guard by news and issues that come up. That information gets shared to clients as needed. Professionals and project managers have all this information, and then the information that's relevant to our clients absolutely gets passed along. And in many cases, our clients are water professionals themselves and are tracking this information internally. I like to generalize that there are two types of clients. There are clients who know very little about hydrogeology and water supply development. For example, perhaps it's a landowner that's developing a subdivision and they would hire our company to develop their groundwater the same way that they would hire a traffic engineer to design their roads and, you know, consultants to do these very specialized things. The other type of client is someone who perhaps has a hydrogeology degree and deals with water as part of their core job description. However, just there aren't enough bodies, there aren't enough hours in the day, and so they hire us as extra help to get done what they need to do.
So education-wise, a lot of our listeners are young people who are thinking about a water degree or thinking about going into water. What would you recommend for younger people who are thinking about moving forward into the future?
Well, I have some biases, and let me begin by saying I think there's a place for environmental sciences that focus more on social sciences, but my perspective is that if you're interested in environmental sciences, to push yourself to take the science classes and to pursue the Bachelor of Science and get the science degree. And the reason I recommend that is because my opinion is that it opens more doors. That it's hard to go back and fill in the chemistry and the physics and the higher level math that you may need for various parts of certain jobs. It's harder to do that than it is to go back and understand some of the more policy type aspects. I know that environmental sciences is an important part of curriculums, but I also have observed that there's often a lot of leeway in those types of degrees, and students who have the inclination should push themselves to stick with the science, because my opinion is it opens more doors, especially as an undergrad. And that is because grad school, you will learn so much as an undergraduate, you'll be so exposed to so many things, you may become interested in grad school. And if you are interested in a field, a science-related field, if you have that science background, your training will make you eligible for graduate programs.
When you talk about looking at modeling, and I have found that although calculus 1 and 2 were not my favorite classes, that I am I'm better able to read the model reports and understand the work that's gone on behind it and understand the curves and the graphs that they're showing you because of that background, of having that type of background. It makes a big difference. So I agree on that.
Yeah. And if I can just add on to that, you know, with the exception of very few people, I think math is a hard subject for most people. I think math is hard. And I think when you get to higher level sciences like physics, I think these are just challenging classes. But I worry that students, and here's another one of, you know, my opinions, is that I worry that the women students in particular take that as a reason to not take the classes. They're hard, therefore they're not a science person. And I just think that's a shame. That's a lost opportunity to stick with the math and science, know that everyone else around you is having a hard time too, and that really the goal is to get through it. And if you can pass the class, doors are open. And I would, even though I'm not an engineer, I feel the same about engineering as well, that there are so many opportunities that aren't pursued because I think students are afraid of how difficult the coursework can be.
With your years of experience and working in several different states, do you see a lot of women in consulting, or is it a mostly male-dominated field?
I think that percentage-wise, the profession is probably dominated by men, but I do think that's changing, as it is probably in many sectors. But I also think that means there's opportunities there for women to participate in what I think is one of the most fascinating fields, certainly in the Western U.S., to be involved in water is, I think there's nothing more exciting.
If you want to just learn about the world in general, there's no better topic than water because it's connected to everything.
Well, and that gets to a point that I wanted to make, which is that I do think water is fascinating, especially living in Arizona. And I don't think there's any question that it's important. But one of the reasons why I think it's so interesting is because there's so many intersecting things that affect water. And, you know, my local example is I get the daily paper here in Tucson, and at least weekly and often daily, there's an article about something that's happening locally that has some impact on the work that I do, whether it's air quality regulations or a development that's happening in Tucson that will extract more water, or if it's an environmental regulation that was put forth that'll have some impact on how water is used. The context in which water decisions are made is very rich and diverse. And to be involved in water means that you're actually following and invested in so many things that are happening in your community and in your state. And one of the things that I really enjoy about this business is that I feel like my involvement has the chance to make an impact, that the decision makers are very accessible. We all go to the same meetings. We all grapple with the same issues. And therefore, that I have a chance to help influence the direction of things for the future. And then that's just exciting.
That is exciting. That's incredible. And in terms of working with these things, climate change is obviously on the radar of a lot of people. The climate professionals out there, the policy people are working and grappling with climate change on a daily basis. Are clients coming to you with concerns about water supply in relation to climate change? I mean, obviously there's the CAP and shortage on the Colorado River being driven by climate change. I don't know if everyone connects the two of those, but do they come to you with saying, I'm worried about climate change, I'm worried how my water resources are going to be affected by climate change?
I think what I see more is a secondary level of concern. So I think the big water providers, Tucson Water, Central Arizona Project, they're working internally on these issues and they're doing their own planning and analysis. But what I'm seeing then are projects that spin off of this. So, for example, clients are anticipating the institutional changes that might come when there's less water available, and therefore they need additional groundwater wells to be drilled, or they need some analysis on future water demands to see their water supplies and demands are evenly matched. It's certainly driving questions internally with entities that have water questions. And then in terms of the business angle, it's leading to projects to address some of those anticipated changes.
Is the adaption to climate change creating economic opportunities?
I think the bigger driver is more the economy in general and population growth that have a bigger effect on how busy consultants are. You know, during the Great Recession, belts were tightened, projects were deferred, and that kind of thing.
Oh, so, especially with housing development, of course.
Well, certainly. And then just infrastructure projects or mine expansion. In terms of Arizona water supply, it's fairly complex here because infrastructure is required to access our water. Arizona has ample water resources. We have very deep groundwater basins with high volumes of groundwater in them. And then Arizona has rights to Central Arizona Project water. But the infrastructure required to pump and deliver and distribute that water is significant. So our water issues are complex because of our geography. That's perhaps more of a challenge than availability of water. And then an important tangential idea is water quality. Not all groundwater is created equal, and water quality is going to become more of a concern as in the future as we utilize more water resources. So water quality absolutely is another issue that's going to increase in the future.
That's great to bring up because I haven't talked much about water quality yet. So when you have a client that has a water quality issue, is that a different, do you work differently on that kind of project than you would on a quantity project?
In some ways, water quality can be boiled down to engineering and costs. Just like water extraction is a question of infrastructure and cost, water quality is in a lot of ways the same thing. Water treatment can get the quality of water that's required, but it comes at a cost, and it sometimes comes at a very high cost. And although we have ample groundwater in Arizona, we have naturally occurring constituents that are often above federal drinking water standards.
Oh, so say something like arsenic or...
That's right. So even though it's pristine groundwater, for it to be delivered as drinking water, there's treatment that's required.
One of the people I spoke with about water quality and having wells drilled, a private well versus being on a public supply, is that private wells are often not tested as frequently as public water would be. And that when they go to sell their houses, the quality of the well is an issue. Do you have clients that are just trying to sell their house and have a groundwater well issue? Or are these much larger clients that you're dealing with?
Generally much larger. And this is where the hydrogeology becomes really cool and potentially high value, is that the aquifer, which is the subsurface area where groundwater resides, aquifer can often be layered in terms of water quality. So part of an investigation prior to drilling a large and very expensive groundwater production well would be to do water quality sampling at various depths in the aquifer. And often you will find that there are zones of better water quality than others. So a groundwater extraction well with a little investment up front in sampling, a groundwater extraction well can be designed to potentially minimize or eliminate your water treatment costs. That's a very important part of planning for a groundwater well.
Oh, hence research being such an important skill if you're going to be going into this type of field, is to have that ability to do research, to be able to process data, understand it, make coherent conclusions, and be able to communicate it with your client.
Right.
Clearly. Yeah.
And that's an example of, I think you asked a question about helping clients develop a project. The request might be, we need you to design a well that'll give us this much water. And our first questions or lines of investigation would very well be things like water quality. It also might be on the quantity side, how much land do you have to work with? And let's look at those areas that are likely to be more productive in terms of groundwater quantity than other areas. So an engineer may put a dot on a map and say, this is where the well goes. But the hydrogeologist can come in and say, you may want to consider other areas because you might minimize your long-term costs in terms of energy for producing the water or treating it.
You've mentioned how regulations, even or federal regulations, can have an impact on water planning right here in Arizona. And so that starts to bring up the idea of how connected we are. And Montgomery & Associates has offices in South America. Do you work at all with the offices in South America? Is there information sharing between the two, or are those their own entities?
The professionals are well connected, and we share technical information as needed. Those offices were started primarily to support large mining operations and have begun to branch out into municipal issues because they're on the ground and they're there. One of the limitations to information sharing is language. We do have a number of bilingual staff, and that certainly facilitates information sharing. And then as high-level expertise is needed, you know, bodies will move back and forth across the border to work on various projects.
You attended as an audience member the Sustainable Water for Southern Arizona Community Forum, which was about talking to the community and engaging the community. Why do you feel that it is important for the general public to know more about water?
I think it's important for the public to know about water because I think the public is able to influence policy decisions. And I also think that a lot of these issues are accessible to the public. These moving parts of various regulations and projecting water demand and future population growth are all things that the public has a say in. One of the issues that our state is facing is that Arizona has done an absolutely phenomenal job of recharging and storing water underground. And pulling that water out to fill in gaps in times of shortages is something that we haven't had to do yet, but will have to be done in the future. And I think that's an important policy and planning decision that will affect the public.
So knowledge about water leads to being a smart voter, to being able to write your congressman about issues you're concerned about, or going to city council meetings and being informed about the issue.
I think that's true, and there certainly is room for sort of active advocacy. But I think just on a more passive level, it's important, living in Tucson in an extremely arid region, it's important to understand how so many of our policy and planning decisions are impacted by and will impact water issues. There's a very strong connection to land use and water availability and price, for example.
So you mentioned that the people who work with water are very open to dialogue and that you sit at the same conferences, the same tables. Do you see the public engaging? Do you see new faces there, or is it kind of the same people?
It's probably a fairly closed circle, but it doesn't need to be. Some examples of meetings that policy-oriented public, members of the public might find interesting, for example, are Central Arizona Project Board meetings, which, if I understand, the board will make available via online streaming in the future. Currently, you need to go to a CAP office, either one in Marana or up in Phoenix. I'm not recommending this for everybody, but there are public processes interesting. This is a publicly elected board. And they are discussing some of the most critical issues facing our state in terms of Colorado River issues. And they literally set the price of water that is paid by a large part of Arizonans. So I think there's some opportunities for members of the public to be more aware. The Department of Water Resources website has some very interesting interactive tools to search online for well records using a very friendly map viewer. So there are things that I think, well, students certainly, but just interested sort of citizens of Arizona might not be aware of and might actually be interested in.
You've worked in the private sector for your whole career?
That's correct.
And would you ever work in the public sector? Would you ever want to be an elected official or work for a public institution, knowing what you know with your experience? Or do you have a preference for the private sector?
That's a fun question. I think it's fun to think about how I've been in Arizona for almost a decade. I've watched a lot of things change, and so I do have this, you know, wonderful perspective of just experience. I think it's fun to think about how that experience could be leveraged, you know, to help our state keep moving in the right direction. For me right now, that's consulting, working for a diverse group of clients and client sectors, and we'll see what the future holds.
Thank you so much to Juliet McKenna for taking time to sit down and explain the world of water consulting. The component of timescales that planners have to think in was a great insight into the world of water planning, and as we can see, is much more complicated than one would initially think. Her comments on education are a wonderful addition to the discussion surrounding water as new students and professionals begin a career path at this critical point in water management. Make sure to check back at fathomingwater.com for next week's interview with Zach Sugg. Zach Sugg is a PhD candidate in the School of Geography and Development at the University of Arizona and is a water resource geographer researching groundwater governance, especially in the state of Texas. His background is focused on water governance, groundwater law and policy, political economy of water, rural-urban environmental issues in the American West, and applications of GIS and remote sensing for management of freshwater resources. So tune in next week for that episode. Fathoming Water is produced in Tucson, Arizona at KXCI Community Radio and engineered at Baby Gas Mask Records. Thank you to the University of Arizona's Water Resource Research Center for their support of Fathoming Water. Thank you to Chris Levesque for our theme music, A Walk in the Wasteland. And thank you for listening. I'm your host, Melissa Mosey.